Have you ever gazed up at the night sky, maybe on a really clear, moonless evening, and just felt that sense of wonder, you know, that feeling of being connected to something absolutely immense, these vast unseen forces that are quietly but powerfully shaping everything around us? It's feeling as old as humanity, really. And it leads us straight into some of the deepest, most persistent puzzles in modern physics.
Yeah, we're talking about those fundamental questions that keep cosmologists and, well, particle physicists up at night. Like, why is our universe expanding and what's making it speed up? What is this invisible cosmic glue, this dark matter that seems to hold whole galaxies together? And then there's the flip side, dark energy, this mysterious push driving everything apart. Even down at the tiniest scales, we're still trying to figure out how all the fundamental particles we know actually came to be and, you know, how they get their mass. These are huge cosmic riddles. And our best theories, things like the Standard Model of Particle Physics and the Lambda CDM model for cosmology, they're incredibly powerful, don't get me wrong, but they're still struggling to fully solve these mysteries.
Right. Often they need us to kind of slot in new pieces, new components, just to make the math work out. It feels a bit like patching holes sometimes. Okay, so let's unpack this. Today, we're diving into a really bold, maybe even radical, new theoretical framework, one that aims to tackle all these massive questions. And crucially, not with more patches, but from a single, elegant, and completely new starting point. We're talking about the Resonant Dark Universe, or RDU for short. Our mission today is to take a deep dive into this developing model. It was created by an independent researcher, Joshua Nokelman, and we're going to try and help you understand how the RDU proposes to unify, well, basically everything, from the smallest particles right up to the largest structures in the cosmos. And we'll try to make it all as simple and clear as possible, especially for people who maybe don't deal with these super complex ideas every day. Think of us as your guides on this pretty mind-bending journey.
It's fascinating, you know, because the RDU isn't just about making small adjustments to the models we already have. It literally rebuilds cosmology and particle physics right from first principles. It takes a completely different approach. And it does this by introducing two incredibly radical ideas right at the start. It lays a totally different foundation for how we think about reality itself. So the first big idea, our universe might not actually have time in the way we usually think about it. You know, instead of reality being this continuous flowing river, picture it more like a flip book. Or maybe frames in a movie reel. Each individual frame is a discrete, totally unchanging quantum state. It just is. So time, then, isn't some fundamental dimension that everything exists in. It's what we call an emergent property. It's something we perceive because of the sequence, the cause and effect order, as one quantum state transitions to the next. Our whole experience of time, past, present, future, is basically just our consciousness making sense of this orderly progression of static snapshots. It's a huge shift in thinking. The universe isn't in time, it kind of generates time from its structure. And that leads directly to the second really radical unifying idea, that all of this, every single bit of reality from the Big Bang to matter and forces, is governed by one single field, a scalar field. The RDU calls it the Kronos field, or Eche. Now, a scalar field, just think of it like an invisible energy field everywhere in space. At every point, it just has a value, like temperature, no direction, just a magnitude. And this one field, the Kronos field, with its own built-in properties, acts as the ultimate cosmic conductor. It's responsible for literally everything. The universe's expansion, the existence of matter, the forces between particles, it all comes down to this one field. So if you connect that to the bigger picture, what you have is this sweeping reinterpretation of physics. It aims to solve all those long-standing problems, inflation, dark energy, dark matter, even the Higgs mechanism for mass, without needing lots of separate, sometimes ad hoc theories. It's incredibly ambitious. And yeah, we're going to break down exactly how it claims to do all that step by step so you can really get a handle on the scale of it.
Okay, let's really dig into that first idea then, because it is genuinely mind-bending. A universe where time isn't fundamental. This no-time philosophy, it's not just a cool thought experiment, right? It's baked into the foundation of the RDU. For most of us, time just flows. It's the backdrop. But what does the RDU really mean when it says time is emergent? Well, instead of that smooth, continuous river, the RDU says reality is this discrete, causally ordered sequence of quantum states. Think about that movie reel analogy again, or maybe stop-motion animation. Each frame is perfectly static, completely frozen. Nothing moves within the frame itself. But when you play those static frames in the right order, one after another, your brain creates the illusion of motion, and crucially, the perception of time passing. That sense of before and after just comes from the specific ordered sequence, the cause and effect, linking one static state to the next. So in this view, if you could somehow freeze the universe at one instant, there'd be no clock ticking inside it. Everything would just be in that state. Time is the relationship between the states, not the container for them.
Wow, okay.
And that completely changes how we think about physical laws, doesn't it? Because usually in physics, laws are written as like time-dependent equations, formulas describing how things change continuously over time, you know, like calculating a ball's trajectory. But if time isn't fundamental, if it's just emerging from the sequence...
Exactly. Those laws aren't about continuous change anymore. The RDU sees them as transition rules. They basically dictate how one allowed quantum state snaps or transitions into the next valid state. Think of it like the rules of a really complex board game. Each move changes the board into a new allowed configuration. It's a fundamental shift. We move from a universe existing in time to a universe that is a sequence of states, with time just emerging from the connections between them. Yeah, the movie is the sequence of frames, and the flow is just how we experience watching it.
Okay, that naturally leads to the next big question then. If time is just this emergent thing, this perception of states changing, what actually drives those changes? What makes one state transition to the next? What are the rules of this cosmic flipbook?
Right, and that's precisely where the Chronos field theory comes in. It's the star of the show. This single scalar field isn't just sitting there passively. It's the cosmic conductor, the unifying thread that governs all the dynamics, all the transitions in the entire universe. Its own internal properties are enough, the RDU claims, to drive the whole expansion history of the universe, from the very beginning right up to now. And here's where it gets really neat in terms of tidying up cosmology. You know how in standard models we have separate things to explain different eras, like the Inflaton field for that super rapid expansion right at the start, cosmic inflation, and then totally separately we have dark energy making things accelerate now. Well, in the RDU, the Chronos field does both jobs. It's the same single field. It accounts for that initial inflationary burst, and it drives the current accelerated expansion. Noted for two different unrelated explanations. It just brings it all together.
That is much more elegant.
It is, and it goes further. The RDU radically reinterprets what particles fundamentally are. Forget tiny billiard balls or point-like things. In the RDU, all fundamental electrons, quarks, everything, are described as stable resonant excitations of this very same Chronos field. The technical term they use is solitons.
Solitons. Okay. How should we picture that?
Imagine the Chronos field is like a huge, perfectly calm ocean. Now, particles aren't like little boats floating on the ocean. Instead, imagine the particles are the ocean itself, but formed into stable, self-sustaining ripples or standing waves. A soliton is exactly that, a wave that keeps its shape and moves without spreading out, like a perfect smoke ring. So in the RDU, an electron isn't some separate thing sitting in the field. It's a specific, stable vibration pattern of the Chronos field itself. It means everything we think of as matter is fundamentally just the Chronos field vibrating in particular ways, woven right into the fabric.
Okay, now this is where it gets really interesting, maybe even a bit weird. The RDU's take on black holes. Because normally we think of black holes as, well, cosmic vacuum cleaners, right?
Yeah.
Gravitational sinks. Places where gravity is so strong, nothing escapes. The end point for massive stars.
Right, sort of passive cosmic drains.
But the RDU completely flips that. It introduces this core idea. All black holes aren't just passive sinks. They are active dark resonator cores, or DRCs. And that's not just changing the name. It's a fundamental shift in what they do. It means the crazy conditions needed to form an event horizon, that point of no return, are exactly the same conditions needed for all the fundamental forces to kind of merge, to unify, and for a whole new physical process to kick in.
Exactly. So black holes, or DRCs, aren't cosmic dead ends anymore. They're active processing centers, cosmic recycling plants, constantly transforming matter. And this active role is absolutely crucial because it means they're shaping the universe, especially when we try to understand dark matter and dark energy. They're not just collecting stuff, they're creating new stuff.
Creating dark matter and dark energy.
Through something called the Noekelman mechanism. This is really central to how the RDU explains the dark sector, giving it a physical origin linked to these DRCs, instead of just being unknown things we add to equations. So what happens inside these DRCs? The mechanism describes this process where the DRC performs a gravitational crunch on infalling baryonic matter.
Baryonic matter.
Yeah.
That's just normal stuff, right? Protons, neutrons, us.
Exactly. All the visible stuff. Under the incredible pressure and unified force conditions inside a DRC, this normal matter gets transformed into a whole spectrum of stable, brand new particles called amons. Now, amons are key. The RDU describes them as the basic building blocks, the quanta, of an original unified field, like a tier zero reality that existed before our universe. So DRCs are basically converting our kind of matter, which the RDU calls exotic, back into its original native amonic form.
Okay, converting normal matter back to amons. And you mentioned these amons are superluminal, faster than light.
Well, yes, but crucially, not faster than light in our space-time. They exist and move in that different tier zero reality where our usual speed limit doesn't apply. It's a bit mind-bending, but it's core to the model. And this whole mechanism provides a physical dynamic process for creating the dark sector, linking it directly to black holes, these DRCs.
Right. Okay. So normal matter goes in, gets crunched, becomes amons. But we have two dark things, dark matter and dark energy. How do amons become both?
Good question. That's where the egress factor comes in. It's usually written with the Greek letter osko, pronounced eel. Think of osko as a kind of mathematical switch or a gatekeeper inside the DRC. Its value depends on the conditions within the DRC. If this egress factor is greater than one, it means the amon has enough energy or the right kind of interaction profile to actually escape the DRC. These escaping amons are what we perceive as dark energy. They contribute to the universe's expansion.
Okay, so equivalent means escape equals dark energy. What if it's less than one?
If AFS is less than one, the amon doesn't escape. It gets captured, remaining gravitationally bound within the DRC's extended influence, kind of like its atmosphere. These captured amons form dark matter.
Wow, so one factor, AFS determines whether an amon becomes dark energy or dark matter. That's really neat.
It is elegant, isn't it? It gives us single unified physical origin for both components of the dark sector, born from the same process in these DRCs. They aren't separate mysteries anymore.
Okay, so we have these amons sorted into dark matter and dark energy. Does the RDU say how they behave? Like, is there a model for the dark sector itself?
Yes, exactly. It leads to the concept of a dark sector standard model, describing how these amons interact. Let's tackle dark matter first. The RDU proposes that the amons making up dark matter are called hadrons. And unlike standard models where dark matter is often assumed to barely interact, RDU suggests these hadrons interact via a new dark strong force.
A dark strong force, like the one holding atomic nuclei together.
Analogous, yes. And just like our strong force has gluons, this dark strong force is mediated by a particle called a chronogluon. But here's the really interesting part. This dark strong force has a dual nature. It attracts over long distances, but it repels at short distances.
Attraction and repulsion. Why is that important?
Because it potentially solves a major headache in cosmology, the cuspy halo problem.
Right. That's where simulations predict dark matter halos around galaxies should be really dense in the middle, like a sharp cusp. But observations often show them more spread out or cored.
Precisely. That short-range repulsion from the dark strong force naturally prevents the hadrons from packing too tightly in the center. It creates those chord profiles that astronomers actually see. The RDU also suggests hadrons have generally lower superluminal velocities. They move slower in their tier zero reality, giving this force more time to act effectively.
Okay, that makes sense for dark matter. What about dark energy, the leptohamons? Are they connected?
They are, through a process called amonic bremsstrahlung. Remember, bremsstrahlung means breaking radiation.
Yeah, when particles slow down and emit something.
Right. So imagine these high-velocity leptoamons, dark energies, zipping through the universe. As they interact with the background chronos field, they can decelerate slightly and emit a chronogluon, the same particle that mediates the dark strong force for dark matter.
Wait, so dark energy can create the force carrier for dark matter?
Effectively, yes. It means the dark energy field is constantly, though very slowly, leaking a tiny amount of its energy into the dark matter force field.
Leaking energy. So what does that mean for dark energy itself?
It means dark energy cannot be a cosmological constant.
Because a constant wouldn't change, wouldn't leak energy?
Exactly. A cosmological constant, which is what the standard CDM model mostly assumes, has a fixed, unchanging energy density. But if dark energy is leaking, it must be dynamic. Its energy density must be slowly decreasing over cosmic time.
And that's a specific, testable prediction.
Absolutely. It's a crucial difference between the RDU and standard TDM. Finding evidence that dark energy is dynamic would be huge support for the RDU.
Okay, let's zoom back in. From the cosmic scale of dark energy leaking, right down to the quantum world, Particles. In normal physics, we have the Higgs field giving particles mass. How does the RDU's single Cronos field handle that? How does it give rise to electrons, quarks, all the different particles with different masses?
The core idea is that mass isn't something a particle has. It's not an inherent property it's just born with. Instead, mass is the total energy needed to create and sustain a specific, stable, standing wave pattern of the Cronos field itself.
Like a musical note on a string, a specific vibration takes a certain amount of energy.
Exactly like that. A higher note needs more energy, a lower note needs less. In the RDU, a particle's mass is basically the energy locked up in a specific stable vibrational pattern, its unique note within the Cronos field. It is the energy signature of that stable vibration.
Okay, so that's the resonant coupling model you mentioned.
That's the one. It proposes that all the fundamental particles, the electrons, quarks, neutrinos, the whole zoo, are these stable, resonant, standing wave excitations, the solitons of the Cronos field. They are the field vibrating stably. And the RDU reinterprets the Higgs boson itself as the fundamental scalar excitation of the Cronos field. So Cronos field isn't just making other particles. Its own most basic vibration is what we observe as the Higgs boson.
Wow. And did they predict its mass?
Get this. Simulations based on the RDU's Cronos field equations derived a mass of 125.0 GeV JeV. A JeV, giga electron volt, is the standard unit here. A proton is about 0.938 JeV.
125.0 GeV. Isn't that exactly what they found at the LHC?
Pretty much spot on. The experimentally measured value is very close to 125 GeV, so the RDU simulation nailed it. It means the mass-giving mechanism isn't separate. It's built right into the fundamental field, the Cronos field itself. It's part of the universe's basic fabric.
That's incredible. But, okay, one particle is amazing, but can it really predict the masses of all the known particles accurately? That seems like a huge ask for one field.
It does, but the RDU's research claims exactly that. They ran numerical simulations, basically complex computer programs solving the Cronos field equations. And these simulations derive the masses of all 12 fundamental fermions, that's the 6 quarks and the 6 leptons, including the electron and neutrinos, with really remarkable accuracy. We're talking errors typically between 0.00% and 0.12%.
Huh?
So it's astonishingly precise.
0% error, like perfect prediction.
For the electron, yes. A simple 1D simulation produced a stable soliton, that standing wave, with an energy of 0.511 MeV. That is the exact measured mass of the electron.
Okay, that's impressive. What about others?
They look for higher harmonics, like higher notes on that string. And they found the masses of the muon at 105.8 MeV and the tau at 1779 MeV, again with similar tiny errors.
These are the electron's heavier cousins, right? Their masses seem arbitrary in the standard model.
Exactly. The standard model measures them. It doesn't predict them from first principles. The RDU claims to derive them. And it goes further. Simulations derive the individual quark masses and then combine them to form protons, predicting 938.5 MeV-D, and neutrons, 939.8 MeV-D. And crucially, the simulations show that most of the proton or neutron mass doesn't come from the quarks themselves, but from the binding energy of the Cronos field holding them together, which is exactly what physicists already knew from experiments.
So it's reproducing known physics while also predicting the fundamental masses. That's powerful.
It suggests a really deep unity, yeah. And it doesn't stop at particles and mass. It unifies the forces too. The RDU posits that the three quantum forces, electromagnetic, weak, and strong, aren't separate fundamental forces. They're all just different ways the Cronos field interacts, different modes of interaction.
So the field not only creates the particles, but dictates how they talk to each other.
Precisely. For example, the photon, carrying electromagnetism, that's derived as a massless propagating ripple in the Cronos field. The W and Z bosons for the weak force, they come out as massive transient waves in the field. And the gluon for the strong force holding quarks, it's not seen as a free particle bouncing between quarks. It's identified as the confinement field itself.
The confinement field?
Yeah, picture it like a stretched flux tube or a cosmic rubber band made of stressed Cronos field between quarks. That's the gluon field keeping them stuck together.
Okay, but what about the big one, gravity, the one that's so hard to unify with quantum mechanics?
It emerges too. Simulations of orbiting DRCs, those RDU black holes, generated ripples propagating outwards in the Cronos field. And these ripples had a very specific quadrupolar polarization, like a four-leaf clover pattern. That's the unique signature of a spin two wave.
Which is exactly what the graviton, the hypothetical gravity particle, is supposed to be.
Correct. So the RDU simulation derived the graviton from orbiting DRCs within the Cronos field framework. It seems to pull gravity into the fold naturally.
Mind blown again.
Okay, so Cronos field gives us mass, forces. What about other basic particle properties, like spin or electric charge? Good point. The RDU tackles those too, trying to derive them from the field's dynamics, not just assign them. For spin, that intrinsic angular momentum particles have, not like a spinning top, but fundamental expressia. The RDU interprets it as the quantized angular momentum of the field wiggles inside each particle's soliton structure. And the analysis confirms spin A for fermions, matter particles, and spin 1 or spin 2 for bosons, force carriers, matching exactly what we observe. It just falls out of the field dynamics.
Okay, spin makes sense. What about charge? How does a single field create positive and negative charges and fractional charges for quarks?
Charge is interpreted as a topological twist in the soliton structure. They call it the Kronos winding number. Think of twisting a ribbon before joining the ends. The number of twists is the winding number. In the RDU, these twists in the Kronos field structure inside a particle create charge. And the math worked out to give the correct integer charges, like -1 for the electron, and the weird fractional charges, +23 and -13, for quarks.
A twist in the field is charge. That's wild.
And for quarks, it gets even cooler. The twist isn't just in one direction. It exists across three orthogonal axes at once. This three-component twist naturally explains color charge, the property governing the strong force, and it automatically explains why quarks have to combine in specific ways, like three quarks and a proton, to make color-neutral particles, which is the only kind we ever see freely.
So even quark confinement is explained by this topological twist idea. It really seems to tie everything together.
That's the goal, a completely unified picture from one field.
All right, let's shift gears back to the really big picture, cosmology. Because there's been huge news recently from the James Webb Space Telescope, JWST. You've probably seen the headlines about these little red dots, these incredibly distant galaxies, seen way back in the early universe, less than a billion years after the Big Bang.
Yeah, they've really shaken things up.
Because they're way too massive.
Okay. Right?
And forming stars like crazy, far faster than our standard models predict. It completely messes with the standard CVM picture of bottom-up formation. You know, the idea that big galaxies form slowly over billions of years as smaller things merge together.
Like building a city from huts to villages to towns. It takes time.
Exactly. Finding these huge, mature-looking galaxies so early is like finding fully built skyscrapers when the city should still be laying foundations. It creates this massive timeline paradox.
If CDM really struggles to explain it without adding extra, sort of just so ingredients after the fact, it points to something missing in the standard story.
So the obvious question, how does the RDU handle these impossible early galaxies? Does its different physics offer a solution?
It does. The RDU actually predicts this kind of thing. It uses a top-down model for structure formation, the opposite of CDM's bottom-up. It predicts large, well-formed structures should exist early on, and it has a two-stage mechanism for how they form so quickly.
Okay. Stage one?
Stage one involves the gravitational lattice as a cosmic scaffold. The idea is the very early universe wasn't perfectly smooth. Primordial ripples in the Kronos field created a lasting structured background of gravitational waves. Imagine the interference pattern when waves cross each other on a pond, you get stable peaks and troughs. The RDU suggests something similar happened across the universe, creating a stable grid-like gravitational lattice. This lattice had nodes, regions of higher gravitational potential that acted like predefined gathering points for matter, a cosmic blueprint laid down very early.
So the universe already had a structure, a framework, telling matter where to congregate.
Exactly. The ingredients for massive galaxies were essentially pre-sorted into the right locations, far earlier than random chance would allow in an ACDM.
Okay, the lattice provides the where. But what kicks off the superfast collapse into these massive galaxies, gravity alone is too slow.
Right. That's stage two, the primordial molecule seeding hypothesis. This is a really neat chemogravitational trigger.
Chemogravitational.
Yeah. As the universe cooled, the very dense conditions in those lattice nodes were perfect for forming molecular hydrogen, H2, very rapidly. And here's the key. When hydrogen atoms combine to form H2 molecules, they release binding energy. The RDU proposes this released energy acted like an extra powerful compression force, non-gravitational, pushing matter together much faster than gravity alone. This extra push caused a runaway collapse into primordial dark resonator cores, the seeds of those early massive galaxies.
So the chemistry of hydrogen formation actually accelerated the gravitational collapse.
That's the idea. And simulation showed this rapid collapse only works in a narrow Goldilocks zone of conditions-specific H2 reaction rates and cooling efficiencies. It suggests forming these primordial DRCs was a finely tuned, maybe relatively rare event, explaining why only certain regions form these giants so early.
Okay, so primordial DRCs form quickly thanks to hydrogen. What happens next? How do they become huge galaxies so fast?
Well, remember, DRCs aren't passive. They are active engines running the Noch-Hohmann mechanism. This active processing lets them pull in, or accrete, surrounding matter at rates far exceeding the normal Eddington limit.
The Eddington limit, that's the speed limit for how fast black holes can normally feed, right?
Yeah.
Before radiation pressure pushes the food away.
Exactly. It's like trying to fill a funnel too quickly, the pressure pushes back. Standard black holes hit this limit. But RDUs DRCs, because they're actively converting the enfalling matter via the Noch-Hohmann mechanism, effectively bypass this limit. They don't have the same radiation pressure bottleneck. This super accretion directly explains how these early galaxies could grow so massive and form stars so efficiently, so quickly. It avoids the long waits needed for mergers in CDM.
So the RDU's unique DRC physics directly solves the JWST timeline paradox.
It provides a concrete physical mechanism for rapid top-down formation, yes.
Which means these impossible early galaxies aren't impossible in the RDU at all. They're expected.
They fit naturally into the framework. And even better, the RDU research had actually predicted that telescopes like JWST would continue to find unexpectedly early and massive galaxies.
So the JWST results are actually a confirmation of a prior RDU prediction.
That's how the RDU proponents see it, yes. It lends significant observational weight to the theory.
Okay, that's compelling. Does the RDU make other near testable predictions beyond explaining things we've already seen?
It does. Building on the DRC physics, it predicts a whole new class of objects. Frustrated or failed dark resonator cores.
Frustrated DRCs. What frustrates them?
Specific conditions during their formation. If the collapsing cloud has a very strong magnetic field, stronger than some critical value, or if it's spinning too fast with too much angular momentum, those conditions can actually block or stall the Noch-Hohmann mechanism. The matter conversion process gets jammed up.
So they fail to become efficient Ullmann factories. What happens to the energy then?
Instead of making dark matter and energy, they vent that energy primarily as intense synchrotron radiation, peaking in the millimeter wave part of the spectrum. This predicts a whole new population of cosmic sources, ultra-bright millimeter wave radio objects. The RDU calls them hypothetical punctum-class objects.
And the key observational signature?
Extreme radio brightness, but crucially, no corresponding bright emissions in optical light or X-rays. They'd be radio loud, but optically dark or faint.
That's a very specific, unique fingerprint. Something astronomers could actually search for with radio telescopes.
Exactly. It's a clear, falsifiable prediction. Finding them would be strong support for the RDU's extended physics.
Are there other specific falsifiable predictions that set the RDU apart?
Yes. A few others were proposed. One is the condensate chirp. When two supermassive DRCs merge, the RDU suggests there might be a secondary, distinct gravitational wave signal, this chirp writing, on top of the main merger wave signal that LIGO and Virgo detect. Finding that would be unique to RDU physics.
Okay, a gravitational wave signature. What else?
There's distinct large-scale structure formation. Because the RDU's dark matter, hadrons, interacts differently via the dark strong force, it might create subtle differences in the density profiles of those huge cosmic filaments compared to what CDM predicts. Future surveys might be precise enough to spot that.
So, looking at the cosmic web in detail.
Right, and also potential anomalies in gravitational attractors. Some unexplained gravitational effects in large galaxy clusters might be better explained by the cumulative effects and unique nature of RDU's DRCs, rather than just standard dark matter models.
So several concrete things astronomers and physicists can actually look for to test this.
That's the goal, yeah. A good theory needs testable predictions.
And despite how radical it sounds, how does the RDU actually stack up against the precision data we already have? Does it fit observations like the cosmic microwave background?
It holds up surprisingly well, according to the research papers. Let's take the CMB, that baby picture of the universe. The RDU predicts a value for the scalar spectral index, NS, that measures the initial density wiggles of NS in equals 0.964979. This value shows an excellent fit to the detailed Planck satellite data from 2018. The statistical measure, the reduced chi-squared, is 0.9992. A value very close to 1 means a very good fit.
So it matches the CMB data well. What about the dynamic dark energy prediction? Is there any evidence for that yet?
The RDU's prediction for how dark energy behaves specifically. The parameters W00.998 and why Warhunter 0.013 falls comfortably inside the allowed ranges, the Two Sigma Confidence regions, for big surveys like DCI, Planck, and Pantheon Plus R.
And Two Sigma means pretty likely.
Yeah, it's well within the statistically favored region. It means the idea of dynamic evolving dark energy, as predicted by RDU, is perfectly consistent with our current best data. It's not ruled out at all. In fact, the data allows for it.
That's significant because it's a key difference from standard CDM.
It is. And one more thing. They developed an in-body simulation engine called Helios, based on RDU physics.
Yeah.
It successfully modeled galaxy evolution and produced different types of dark matter, halo structures, cord, cuspy, even hollow profiles, just by tuning the parameters of the RDU's dark strong force. And these match the variety of halos astronomers actually observe.
So the simulations based on RDU physics can reproduce the structures we see in the universe.
It seems so, yes. It shows the framework is capable of explaining observed cosmic structures.
Okay, so let's try and wrap our heads around all of this. We've gone on quite a journey here into the resonant dark universe. It's genuinely ambitious stuff. We started with this idea of a no-time universe. Reality is just a sequence of quantum states, all governed by one single thing. The Kronos field.
Right, a radical foundation.
Then black holes become active dark resonator cores, using the Noeckelmann mechanism to recycle normal matter into dark matter and dark energy, giving them real physical origin. And then, maybe most mind-blowingly, all the particles, all the forces, even the Higgs, even gravity, just emerge as different vibrations, different resonant excitations of that same single Kronos field.
With predictions matching experiments with incredible accuracy.
Yeah, predicting particle masses, some exactly. And then, tying back to cosmology, it offers this compelling top-down explanation for those impossible early galaxies JWST is seeing, driven by that gravitational lattice and rapid DRC formation, resolving that timeline issue.
If you look at the whole picture, the RDU presents itself as this complete, self-consistent framework. It spans from the tiniest quantum scales right up to the largest cosmological ones. And it does this within standard 3+1 dimensions, which makes it different from things like string theory. And crucially, it offers direct ways to test its predictions against particle experiments and astronomical observations.
Which makes it feel more grounded, maybe.
Potentially, yes. It provides clear targets for validation or falsification. Now, it's still a developing model, obviously. There are areas needing more work, like refining neutrino mass predictions, getting a more complete quantum field theory description. But the core ideas and the successes it claims so far are really thought-provoking. It points towards a possible huge shift in how we understand everything.
It really does. This whole deep dive, it kind of forces you to reconsider the really fundamental things, doesn't it? If time isn't that flowing river we experience, but just emerges from this sequence of quantum states, what does that even mean for our perception, for consciousness, our sense of past, present, future? How would a no-time universe actually feel at its deepest level? And what does it mean for us if everything, you, me, the stars, the forces, is ultimately just a complex vibration or resonance of one single underlying field? It makes the universe seem both incredibly strange and maybe much more unified than we ever thought possible. Well, we hope this deep dive has given you a good sense of the resonant dark universe, this intricate, challenging, and maybe revolutionary picture of reality. Keep exploring, keep asking questions, and thank you so much for joining us on this journey today.